Welcome to Door to Door Insider, where we take a deep dive into the mindset, the why, and the how of the industry's top entrepreneurs, leaders, recruiters, and salespeople. We are the Door to Door Nation. Here is your host, Lee Barber. Let's go.
All right, gang, welcome to Door to Door Insider Season 4. Today's special guest is John the General Soriano, who has many years of experience in a vast number of different industries. At the age of 20, he enlisted in the United States Marine Corps and served his country as an aviation logistics specialist from 2011 to 2014. Once out, John started his journey into entrepreneurship. John had success as a network marketer for years and then in the fitness apparel business for another few years. This taught him the art of public speaking, selling, recruiting, and more. John got into the solar industry with Legacy Power in 2016 and since then has achieved the title of senior director. I'll get this right, gang. Don't worry. He runs the Valor Division, which is a top-performing sales organization. John is also married to his sweetheart, Jazzy. Did I get that right?
Josie.
And has two beautiful sons, Balin and King. Welcome to the show, John. Thanks for letting me stumble through that amazing introduction. This is special for me, man, because I've gotten to know you over the few years that I've been at Legacy Power and just really watched you shine, man, as like an individual of character, of honesty, of respect, a man of faith. And I've seen some and gotten to know some of the amazing humans that you have collected around you. And I'm a big believer in birds as a feather. So welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. I remember a few years ago seeing your podcast. I think this is even before you came to Legacy, actually. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, man, I wonder what somebody's got to do to get on this podcast, you know? And it's just crazy that actually this is the first time I'm telling you this, but that I'm living out that thought from like years ago. It was either like right before you came on, because I remember I came across your podcast, like I said, years before. I didn't know it was you that ran it, but it was that podcast. And so it's crazy. Years later, here I am, you know, like here. So I just thank you. It's an honor to be here. I know that many greats have gone before me. I know that you've interviewed some of the best in the industry. And so to be here is truly an honor. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I like to start everybody off. And I've had the pleasure of, you know, we've done a few leadership retreats together. And so I know some of your childhood story, and I know a little bit of heard about the military and some of your career. But for the guests to know, like, what was early life like for John, family, mom, dad, brother, sister? What did that look like, that landscape?
Yeah, great question. So I wasn't born in the United States. I was actually born in Honduras. So I was 6 years old when I came to the United States. Honduras is one of the most dangerous countries in the world. It's pretty much ran by gangs. And so at a young age, I saw the real poverty. I remember vividly seeing my mom get robbed at gunpoint when she picked me up from school. And what kind of like broke the camel's back was one day someone tried to pick up my sister and pose as like my dad's brother. And so after that, my parents were like, we have to get out of here. Like this place isn't safe. So I'm grateful that they were able to get us visas, right? We came to the United States and I got to grow up here. And, you know, I'm American now.
Yeah.
I got my citizenship several years later. And so, you know, growing
congratulations
up.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. So growing up, I always had an appreciation for our country because I know where I could have ended up. And so, you know, when I was 19, I kind of realized that my life at that point wasn't going in a good way. I had flunked out of college, I couldn't sit still for more than a few hours. So that's why school didn't work out for me, but I tried it anyways. And I realized I'm like, okay, either A, I'm going to go move back with my parents and live a mediocre life, or I can do something drastic. And at that point, I felt like the military was drastic. So I joined the Marine Corps because I needed guidance in my life. I think one thing that plagues our country is there's a loss of masculinity. I think we have a lot of boys that aren't being taught how to be men, or boys are being taught to stay as boys, or even worse, to be girls. And so I realized, I'm like, man, I need guidance. And I'm grateful because the Marine Corps gave me the masculine leadership that I needed. You know, because my parents were immigrants, I never really saw them much growing up because they were always working. They were working like 2-3 minimum wage jobs to provide for us. I'm very grateful for that. But I never really like had that masculine leader in my family because, again, my dad was working. So the Marine Corps gave me that, and it really kind of build good foundations that to this day I still carry. So I'm very grateful for the military and for what it's done in my life. Those 4 years were instrumental in what happened after that, because I needed to know things like discipline, to know things like taking care of your health, to know things like respecting your elders, right? Respecting your superiors, right? Because when you look at this world right now, you know, we have massive amounts of people that operate in dishonor, that operate in hate, you know, and the military taught me, like, you know, the right foundations on what it's on how to really essentially be a man.
Principles.
Yeah. Principles that to this day are still paying dividends.
So let me ask you just a little bit before we move into deeper into the military. And so growing up with your parents, they're working multiple. So one of the things that I love about our country that I really, you know, we're in a weird place.
We are very.
This is America. You know, I have a really diverse past, and with all of the things that have happened to me in my life, I've been able to lay to waste all excuses and become a very successful person with my wife and my daughter and my family, in my career, in my leadership, in my personal development. Like, success is my fault, right? Or lack of success.
Right.
And so I see a lot of this where we have people immigrate over and they do everything they can to build families. And it's like, I think there is a lot of sense of pride in that. What was it like growing up as an immigrant? You came when you were 6, so you had a little bit more, you were Americanized probably a little bit sooner than your parents, right? They were a little bit older. What was that early life like growing up? And do you have brothers and sisters?
I do.
You do?
Yeah, I have an older brother, older sister, and then a younger brother, but he was born like maybe 4 months after we moved here. So he was pregnant in Honduras with my mom, but then he was born here. So he was an American citizen right from the start.
What was early life like in that household?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I had a great childhood. I did. You know, me and my siblings were really close. We pretty much raised each other. You know, we kind of had, like, you know, of course, this is before the days of iPads and the internet. So I still remember vividly just playing outside all the time. And we had our neighborhood friends. Like, I'm very grateful that my parents worked hard enough to provide us like a good, decent community. You know, we weren't in the richest of areas, but we also weren't in the poorest of areas. You know,
we were back home, right? Back
in Cleveland, yeah. Ohio. And so,
well, no, I mean, where you guys immigrated?
Oh yeah. So massive upgrade, right?
Huge difference,
my parents, right? Legit lived in thorough poverty. You know, but I still remember my parents telling us stories of, like, hey, growing up, we would go sometimes 2-3 days without a meal. You know, and one thing that my dad even tells us now, he's like, hey, he calls me Johnny. He's like, hey, Johnny, you know, you never once heard the word food stamps in our home, right? It could have been easy for my parents to kind of like give in and take the easy route, but they're like, no, we're going to work hard. And I never once heard the word food stamps in our house. And not saying anything wrong if you grew up with food stamps, but all that to say that I saw hard work at a young age. At a young age, I saw what true hard work looked like. And I think a lot of where I am today is because at a subconscious level, I modeled that from my parents, where I saw them work 16, 18 hours, 7 days a week. Never saw my parents take a vacation. Right. And again, the con of that is I never had maybe a strong emotional relationship with them. However, though, things were always provided for, bills were always paid. I always had food on the table. Growing up, me and my siblings had our own car. Like, they afford us, you know, like they did the best they could. And so, like, I'm grateful.
I love hearing those, you know, foundations and fundamentals of like success and like hard work. So you get into the military. Were you in for 4 years?
4 years, yeah.
What was your career in the military like for
so
you?
So I actually wanted to do 20 when I first,
really?
Oh yeah, when I first got in, I was, like, in the Marine Corps, we call it being supermoto, like motivated. And first year I was like all in. I'm like, this, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to become an officer one day. Like, I was all in. And so my craft was aviation specialist. And so I worked on that's what brought me to California. I got stationed in the Miramar base here. So essentially my role was just to provide, what was called the repairable parts, which is the more expensive parts of a F-18 jet, and ensure that, you know, we had parts ready in the warehouse because jets break down all the time. And they're always needing to be replaced and fixed and stuff. So my job, it was a supply management job. But it was great. You know, it taught me a lot about organization, it taught me a lot about, you know, how to understand the supply chain industry and all the things, structure, right, and systems. But about 2.5-3 years in is when I got exposed to entrepreneurship, started listening to guys like Jim Rohn for the first time, Tony Robbins. And that was the first time in my life where I had heard that you're in control of your life. Cause prior to that, I thought you had two choices in life. Either A, you went to college, got good grades and got a decent job at the end of all that, or B, you went to the military, right? Or a combination of the two. Like, I literally thought those were the two really good choices in life, right? Well, or choice three, work some minimum wage job. And
you know, isn't that what like most people, like, mm-hmm. I remember it's like, you know, you have kids like write down what you want when you're a kid, and there's, you know, like 20 or 30 jobs or careers that they'll pick that are these kind of minimal income, cop or firefighter or doctor, or like there's this limited belief system, mm-hmm. that's really set into us in childhood, or go to the military.
Yeah.
It's like, there's not, it's like, go be an entrepreneur, build right. a multi-million dollar organization. That's not in the concept. And it's like, when we listen to this content from Jim Rohn or Tony Robbins or any of the goats, you know, Think and Grow Rich, when you hear this stuff, it like changes your mind into the possibility of abundance. It's
exactly
like, that's when like the light bulb turns on.
And see, and that's the key word, abundance, right? What's crazy is when you look at the natural world doesn't have this concept of scarcity, right? The river doesn't one day wake up and say, all right, I'm going to start withholding my water. Right. You know, you don't see an apple tree one day waking up and be like, all right, I'm only going to produce 10% of what I usually do. Right. Like, you can't out drink how much water there is in the world. You can't out eat how many apples and oranges there are in the world. Right. Like, the world around us is filled of abundance. Right. So scarcity is something that we're taught at a young age. I think in school, we're taught what to think, not how to think. Right. We're taught how to be workers, not how to be thinkers. And I think that was the time in my life where I started to think for myself, where I really started questioning things in a healthy way, not like in a pessimistic kind of way, but I really started questioning, like, wait a minute, am I really where I want to be? And I think that's what makes humans so different than any other species in the world, is that we have the concept of awareness, that we can zoom out of our own lives and evaluate our lives and ask ourselves, do I like where I'm going? And if not, how can I change it? No other animal can do that. A gazelle can't wake up one day and say, you know what? I'm sick and tired of being a gazelle. I'm sick and tired of being eaten by lions. I'm going to be the lion today. They can't do that, right? A gazelle will always be a gazelle. A lion, always a lion. A seagull, always a seagull. But humans have the ability to think for themselves. And so I'm grateful for those guys that, you know, Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins, all those guys, that was my early start at thinking for myself. And then that's when all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I actually don't want to do the military anymore. Like, I'm grateful. I love it. There was a lot of good in it. But I'm like, this isn't what I want to do for the next, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of my life. And so then that's when I started being like, all right, let me look into entrepreneurship. Let me look into betting on me and me deciding what I'm worth instead of somebody else telling me what I'm worth.
So you're going to end your career in the 4 years in the military. What are the first things on your mind as an entrepreneur? Like, I from your bio, it sounded like, what were some of the first things that you got into?
Yeah. So actually I got into network marketing. So I worked with a company called Vima, where we sold energy drinks. And, you know, this is before the days of like, where this is when you only had Red Bulls, right? There wasn't this concept of like a healthy energy drink, where now there's tons of them. But back then in 2013, there wasn't. And so, yeah, we sold like energy drinks, eventually, protein drinks. And, it was this kind of big, kind of fad within the young adults. There were thousands of young adults that were doing it. It was built on a lot of hype. I learned a lot about public speaking. I learned a lot about recruiting. However, we weren't really taught on how to retain our people, how to develop our people. I learned those skill sets later down the road. So that was like a good 3 year about. I did that for 3 years and I was like all in, and I probably would still be in it to this day. However, the FDA came in was it the FDA? I forget. One of the federal agencies came in and literally shut the business down and deemed it a pyramid scheme at the time. A year later, they won the lawsuit. But by then, the company's reputation was tarnished and everybody went on to do different things. So, that was a good season in my life. So it was because of that industry where I learned. And that's when I got exposed to Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins, all those guys. But I remember after that ended, I was like, man, I'm going to find something Because I made a decision. I'm like, I will never allow someone else to dictate what I'm worth. I always wanted to be in something that where I decided what I'm worth, right? Which is, you know, sales, commission jobs, all those things. And so it was about another year until I found Solar. But in between that, I did like a fitness apparel business where I sold, you know, fitness apparel and did pretty good for not knowing what I was doing. I had ambassadors, athletes, we had a website, we had boot camps happening. Like, it did pretty good for not knowing what I was doing. But after a while, I just was like, this isn't it. Like, this isn't what I want to do. Like, fitness for me was more of a hobby, not like something that I'm like, this is gets me excited to wake up. But I liked working out. I still do. But back then, I liked it even more. And then so I decided to kind of disband that company. And then
so it's interesting. Some nuggets so far, man. I love the you can't outdrink the river and you can't out eat the apples. Abundance. And then, you know, I love that part. I'm still kind of resonating on that. And then, you know, what you just said about knowing, not letting somebody dictate my worth. So interesting. I'm flying over here and, you know, I really try not to engage people on social media. I just don't, I don't look at social media often, but you know, my aunt posted this thing yesterday and it's a picture of Elon Musk and, Bezos and Zuckerberg and, you know, how much Elon's made and how much Bezos has made and how much Zuckerberg's made. And then there's, you know, this motley looking crew of humans over here and it says minimum wage, $7.25. And I'm, you know, and I post and I delete and I know I'm not going to do it. And then I'm on the plane today and I'm like, and there's all these comments and I'm like, I got to. So I just get on and I go, how much has Elon paid in taxes? It's $11 billion. And then I say, how many jobs has Elon created? And it's 6,000 plus. And that's one of the, and Tesla. And then you go into SpaceX and then you go into Skylink. And it's like, in my point on, and I posted it and I'm like, it's not successful people's fault that, because we're talking about most people are defining success by finances. Mm-hmm. They're saying, oh, you're a millionaire. That's successful. Well, most successful people have mental success, spiritual success, physical success, financial success. And also they're the biggest risk takers. Entrepreneurs mm-hmm. like us are the biggest risk takers. I've taken right. so many huge risks that were just terrifying, but I stepped into them. And I'm also the one, you know, when I counted the teams in my roofing company, I'm like, I'm employing 70 plus people. And my point on this was you can't blame people for their success, for the lack of success of other people. If your valuation of yourself is a $7 or $10 or $12 employee, you're letting other people dictate your value.
Right.
And that's because you have a low value cast on exactly. yourself. And it can't be anybody else's. And listen, leadership is influence, but influence comes from value. And we right. get paid for our value as human beings. And the reason that we're valuable human beings is we've put an immense amount of time in our mental, spiritual, physical, financial aspects of our life so that we can help guide people
right.
in their lives. So we do have value. And so it's interesting that you were saying that because I'm like, that's one of the biggest principles in my life is to always become a more valuable and influential person in a positive way. And I love what you said because it's never let somebody dictate your values. That was a nugget for me, man. I just had a, so you go through a year.
If I can share on that too, like my mentor early on, he said, John, your paycheck is always a reflection of the value that you bring to the world. Right. And you know, you talk about a guy like Elon Musk, right? Elon Musk has added more value. When I say value, it doesn't just mean money. That's part of it.
Part of it.
But you're right, jobs, economy, all that. But it's like, dude, I drive a Tesla.
The green impact alone.
The Tesla has changed my life. The autopilot is revolutionary for me. You know, I'm grateful that I live in an era where I can just push a button and then it drives on its own. And it allows me to just relax a little bit. It allows me to show up to where I'm going with more bandwidth, right? Like if I'm in traffic, it's actually easy. I just put an autopilot and I let the car do the stop and go. And I can just maybe follow up some emails and all that. And, you know, I'm still engaged with the road, but it delevers me a little bit, right? And that's value to me.
Well, and think about, and not to tell you, but think about this is people, they're looking at the money. Most people, I don't know if they know this or not. There was a time that Elon slept at Tesla right. for a year on a couch. And he was always, because Tesla, the production line was failing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, he had big success. I think it was PayPal that he sold, but leveraged all that, like at 100%, leveraged 100% of his money. I mean, SpaceX, the last rocket at SpaceX that took off was his last penny. And if that wouldn't have gone and he wouldn't have got the contract with NASA, people forget like what it took for you to have a self-driving car. Was a
sacrifice.
A lifelong sacrifice, right, and dedication of a single man creating value for, yeah, tens of thousands of people for us to be able to, and then you're mad because he makes money and somebody else is.
And I can even speak into maybe someone watching this that's like, man, I don't feel like I'm getting paid my worth, right? And all that. It's like, at the end of the day, we don't decide necessarily if we think our value is worth this. Right? We have to constantly be developing ourselves. Like, one of the greatest things that we have at our disposal is the internet. Mm-hmm. And if there's someone right now that's like working a minimum wage job, right? They're making $10, $15, $20 an hour, or they want to make more regardless. Hey, go on the internet and get your skill set up. Like, there are millions of videos on YouTube where there's people giving away free content on how to increase your skill set, whether it's you want to be a better graphic art designer, communicator. I remember when I did when I had my fitness apparel business, I had to wear all the hats from a business, right? I had to learn how to manage a website. I had to learn how to do sales. I had to learn back then, if I remember correctly, I think I used to have Shopify, right? So I also, when an order came through, I had to be the one that packaged it and shipped it and had to get tracking information, send emails. Like, I wore every single hat. And you know how I learned all that? Like, I wasn't balling at that time on the internet. I got very scrappy. I looked up videos, you know, how to make a graphic art design. And then I found different apps that do it for free. And sometimes I would use this app and then download the photo because this app couldn't do what this other app could do. But also this app couldn't do what this app could do. So like, I learned how to get creative and work with what I have so that ultimately it all led to me adding value to the marketplace. And there were people out there who loved the brand that I had, right? It was called Pro Fitness Alliance. They believed in our vision and they bought the shirts. But to buy one shirt, there was a lot of things that went behind the scenes, and I leveraged the internet a ton, right? And I feel like people need to understand that, dude, we need to start using the internet, YouTube, Instagram even, as a way to produce, not consume. Because most people consume this content. They go on YouTube and they just watch random videos, funny videos, pranks. It's like, no, go watch, you know, how to build a website. Go watch a video on like, you know, how to run a sales team. Go watch a video on like how to get your first paid but speaking gig.
If we go back a step and we talk about some of the problems that I think, like, you know, it's just with people, humans. I don't think it's new to our, I think some of these problems that we're going through are new to our age, but not all of them. In from what I've seen in my life, in my 48 years, you know, and some of those cognitive, right, like outside of my childhood.
Lee, you're 48.
I know. I got the Botox, man.
You were like late 30s, early.
Appreciate
late
it.
30s, early. Thank 40s, you. Dude.
So it's like, I see that, like, and including me, there was a long period of my life where I was settled. I had settled for life. I was accepting what was around me. And, you know, I would do the same. I would bitch about the government and bitch about this and complain about that. And why didn't I make this and that and this and that? And then there came a time in my life when I was tired of being mediocre, you know. And it's funny because I heard a podcast with Casey Baugh. He was interviewing Coach Pope. One of the things Coach Pope, and I've said on the podcast before, but he was talking about his parents and their careers. And he says, you know, he always used to think their careers were so noble. And he says, but there's no really nobility in mediocrity. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're just cruising through life, you know, mediocre, you have a mediocre, like, and what does it mean? Some people are extremely content. And if you're content, that's fine. But if you have things in your mind where, I wish we lived in a better zip code so my children could go to better schools. I wish we could take better vacations. I wish I could spend richer, more flavorful time with my family and my children. I wish I could put my kids in private school. If those are your thoughts, you're not actually content, but you're living mediocre, and the majority of people won't go on the internet. They won't go search something out. They're so terrified of, and it comes a lot of this to me, I think, from what I've seen, comes down to fear. People have a fear of stepping outside of themselves and doing something more, of going to school or searching or trying. I mean, how many times have we sat in recruiting meetings and a person literally can be sitting there talking to a millionaire who's knocked doors and won't go knock doors because they think they refuse to think they can do it. And I heard this the other day that I think, and I believe this, and John Taylor said on one of my last podcasts, but he thinks that anybody can do the job, that just most people won't. And even when faced with opportunity, even when shown opportunity, even with the, you know, we have these supercomputers, everybody has one. Nobody's using the information. Most people are not using that simple information to get what they want because they're just stuck in mediocrity and full of fear. So like I vibe with what you're saying. It's just, how do we, you know, spur, we try and recruit them out of the matrix is what we try and do.
Right. Yeah. I do think that the number one, kind of thing that will determine success or not in the door-to-door space is the mindset. Because I've seen some people who like look talented, come off talented, have a good resume, and you're like, oh, they're going to crush it. And then they don't. But then I met some people like, I'll share one, Jake Elliott, you know, was one of the people who like, when I first met him, mentally, I was like, he's not going to make it. You know, he came in the office and he was just kind of like, you know, like secretive to himself. And, you know, like, you know, just being blunt here, right? You don't see many successful overweight people in door to door. And so my first thought was like, I don't think he's going to make it. But I didn't recognize that underneath his skin, it was a beast, right? He had a mindset. He was resilient. He didn't give up. And he's one of the best dudes in solar. And as I got to know him more, you know, I realized that he has a very resilient heart. I did this event with all my leaders last year called the Valor War Room. And it was a 2-day kind of like a little bit of a militant type of a boot camp, you can say. There was purpose behind the physical activities we did. But I remember very vividly, we were doing some very hard physical things and Jake Elliott didn't give up. And I saw some guys that were like in great shape, like on the verge of giving up. But he kept going. He was struggling, you know, like he wasn't going very fast. He was going slow. But the one thing he didn't do is give up. And I was like, I saw that. I was like, man. So, you know, it all goes to show it's always what's in here. It's the mindset as to what's in here. My mentor always taught me, he's like, John, if someone could measure your AQ, okay, your adversity quotient, where would you rank up, right? We measure IQ all the time, EQ all the time. But what if you could measure AQ? Because to have success in door-to-door doesn't necessarily require a high IQ, although it helps. Doesn't require a high EQ, although it helps. But the one thing it does require is a high AQ. Because you can have a high EQ, you can have a IQ, EQ, but if you have a low AQ,
you're done.
You're not going to make it, right? One rejection, one cancel, one bad experience, you're out of here. And so the ones that win at this craft are the ones that have a high AQ, and it's all what's in here.
I love that, man. It's, you know, as recruiters at this point in our careers, like I'm sure it's very similar to you. I'm always searching for these common denominators, you know, and it's really hard to define when you're in a meeting with somebody, you know, because everybody talks themselves up. I love that, the way that you put that. That's, man, we need to develop a test for that.
And even a quick, and I'm not saying this is like works all the time, but I learned from a psychologist, they said, you know, a good indicator of future behavior is just past behavior, mm-hmm. right? So I've actually found out that the best people to work with is you ask them, not necessarily a resume, where have you worked, but I found out that people that usually win in this, either they have a strong background in recovery, right? Like you see a lot of people who are previous, maybe drug addicts or in prison, and turn their life around. Why? Because
grit.
Grit. Like to survive where they had been, it required grit. If you were a heroin addict, but to become sober then, it required mental toughness. You don't get to that unless you have mental toughness. So that's one. People that were in the military, right? People that were in the military tend to do well. Why? Because in the military, same thing, right? It's hard, right?
You can't quit.
Work long hours. You can't quit. You have to go. Exactly. Parents, you know, I feel like parents usually do really, really well. Like my ideal rep is someone that's in their like minimum mid 20s, maybe 30, but is married and has kids and has a background in either the military or has a background in maybe recovery, because what that shows me is that fitness. in the past, or fitness, because for them to get to where they're at today, they had to display a high AQ. Right? To get the body like you, Lee, you can't get to a body like yours unless you have high AQ. So those are some things I look for in a person that kind of determines, okay, you at least have some kind of AQ. Now the question is, how much of it do you really have?
I love that. You know, it's how many times, you know, we're going to track back here in a second to when you first started, because I want to get into that conversation, but we're in this now. You know, it's, I've really man, you know, people want to tell you a story when they sit in front of you. And what I've determined is that the human being sitting in front of me is the totality, the equivalent of all of the choices they've made up until that point.
That's right.
And, you know, it's like early on in my career as a recruiter, like I just, you know, like, oh, I would just buy everything. But when I really dig into people, I'm like, you know, in a recruiting meeting, I'm pretty blunt with people because I do have a responsibility as a recruiter to make sure that we're a good fit for you and you're a good fit for us. Right. Meaning that it is my job to make sure that I'm not going to put you in a bad position. So I'll ask things like, how much is in the savings account right now? What does your life look like? Like, do you own or rent a house? Like, how long were you at your last? Why did you leave? And it's like, you know, you get to these places with certain people, especially in our industry, and especially with people who, you know, kind of going from company to company. And it's like, they don't have any sales. They didn't do any sales. They don't have any money. They don't have any bank account. They need $10,000 to start, and they this and they that, and their car's problem. And you're like, you're just a bunch of bad decisions. And I'm not going to make one more for you. And it's like, you're right. You see these other people that come in and they have grit and they have tenacity. And sure, everybody's not in the perfect situation, but I look for those common denominators of people who have grit, people who have loyalty, people who have longevity, people who have families, people who have made good decisions for longer periods in their life where everything doesn't seem to be a mistake when you're sitting with them in a recruiting meeting. And I think, you know, we can start to find some of these common denominators because, you know, my wife's aunt, Teresa, she works for us in the Vegas office. I believe she's 57. She did nails for 20 years. And she came in. She was a setter for 2 years. She tried to go into closing, couldn't catch, was the top setter in the Vegas office multiple years. And she's so unassuming looking. But listen, her spiritual life is fit. Her marriage is fit. She's happy. She reads scripture. She reads books. She takes in content. She's always got a smile on her face. And she's just this little powerhouse. But looking at her and standing most of the door-to-door reps up next to her, you would say, who's the most successful? Mm-hmm. But when you talk to her, you start to find those common denominators in her. So I love that. I love what you said. Let's go back to starting. How did you come into Solar? What was it like? What was the look?
Yeah. So I had a friend I did network marketing with for many years. I was in this kind of like 4 or 5 month kind of limbo where I didn't know what I was doing. This is like when I gave up that fitness apparel business. And actually I did it because I felt largely from God that he's like, hey, I have more for you. You need to let this go. So I gave it up. Kind of. I'm sure you've seen that meme on Instagram where it's like a little girl holding a little teddy bear. And Jesus is like, hey, give me the teddy bear. And behind him, he has this big teddy bear. That was kind of like my moment. I kind of felt God say like, hey, you need to give me what you have and trust that I have more for you. So I did. But then 4 months go by. I'm not doing anything. I'm just doing small jobs to get by and pay the bills. You know, I'm like babysitting. I'm cleaning out garages. I'm doing landscaping. I'm doing all sorts of small things just to get by. And then a buddy from network marketing calls me. And he's like, hey, everything that we've looked for in Bima is in Solar. I was like, what do you mean? And he told me, he's like, hey, you know, like you're paid your worth, you know, it's like you create your own schedule, right? I was like, okay, I'm in. So he actually connected me with Ashton Buzzwell. And he didn't recruit me, but he was the one that.
First meeting.
I called him, talked to actually Lydia. Lydia, his wife at the time, she was their field office manager. And so talked to her and she's like, yeah, come to our correlation. And, you know, I went, it was like 5-10 people at the time. And I was like the youngest guy there. And I was like, okay, cool. So that was my entry. And then 6 months later, that friend that told me to come to he was the one that recruited me over. He's like, hey, I got good news. I'm not going to be the manager of the San Diego market. Like, you know, I'm going to bring my whole team with me. And then that was the first time in 6 months where I like had a big team and they were all younger. They were all like, you know, they all thought like me. And so, you know, after that, I just kind of like worked my way up, you know, learn.
So you started as a setter.
Right.
Right.
Technically both. So my story is unique. So I got my first appointment 2 weeks into Solar, right? It took me 2 weeks to get my first lead. I still remember the exact door, where it's at in San Diego. It's funny. You'll forget lead number 2, 3, 4 and beyond, yeah, no, but never forget the first.
I know where my first alarm was.
Yeah. You never forget the first lead, the first sale and the first install, you know? And so I remember the first lead I got, it was this guy named Michael. He was in the military. He was in the Navy actually. And so I get the lead. I'm excited. I actually text Ashton. I'm like, hey, I got a lead. like, what do I do now? And he's like, oh, let me here. I'll send one of our closers to go close it. I'm like, okay, cool. So I meet with this guy at a Starbucks, like an hour prior to the appointment, give him the bill. He's putting it into his, you know, partner portal for Sunrun. And I'm just like, again, I didn't know what I didn't know. So he's like, okay, I'm going to go do this. Da, da, da. So we go in the appointment. And even though I was like entry level at Solar, as I watched this guy's presentation, I forget his name and he's probably not watching this, but I don't care. But as I watched his presentation, I thought to myself, I'm like, I can do this, because I didn't think he did that good of a job. The deal didn't close, first of all. Like, the guy was pretty much
he didn't do a good job.
No, the guy was pretty much at the end, like,
he only had one job. Yeah, to do the
guy
he didn't
was pretty
it.
Much just like, all right, so this is what it is. Do you want to do it? And the guy was like, oh, I got to think about it. And he's like, okay, cool. All right, we'll talk. Like, it was like that. I was like, what do you mean? Like, no. And so after that one close, I was like, no, like, screw this. Like, I can do this on my own. Like, if this is what I'm going to get, I'm like, I can do a minimum that, even being entry level, if not more. So I remember there were these five videos on Grid at the time. They were called the Power Play videos. And they were each 5 minutes. And they essentially taught you how to close. And I watched each video, I kid you not, at least 5 to 10 times. They were each 5 minutes. So like hours, over and over and over and over.
Man, I used to do that with the Vivint videos when I was at Vivint, dude. Yeah. I would watch Doug Cartwright. There was a few guys and I would just watch them over and over and over and over.
Repetition, right? Mm-hmm. Repetition is the mother of all learning. And so really, when I say setter, I actually learned how to both set and close at the same time. I'm like still learning how to set good appointments, right? But then also as I get those appointments, which it took me a while just to get one, but as I get, like, you know, I'm like also learning how to close. And so I remember, you know, finally, so this was like 2 weeks in, 2 months later, I get my first close, like, ever. And I'm like fired up. Like, it was this old Asian couple.
So
talk
to me about that Death Valley there though, right? Because we have guys come in, it takes you 2 weeks to get your first set and 2 months to get your first close. Yeah. So that's 8 weeks. You're probably what, 10 to 12 weeks out for pay at least.
And mind you, Lee, this is the 250 a kilowatt days.
Yeah, this is back in the day.
This is way back. Yeah. Like most of you guys in solar now don't know what it's like to be paid $250 a kilowatt. And on top of that, back then, if I need a re-roof, automatic DQ.
Done. No.
If you need an MPU, automatic DQ.
There was no concept of like, let me
work in the roof. Or No. It was like literally automatic. They wouldn't touch it.
Those old Sunrun and Vivint, because I was at Vivint back then, the Vivint sun hour calculation was like some kind of mathematical acrobats that like made those guys a lot of money. But no, I get it. So you're not crushing it even on the commission, but that Death Valley of 2 weeks to a sit, 2 months to a close, 2.5, 3 months to a paycheck. Like, what's going on here? What's your belief system at that point? You know, cause one of the things that I love digging into this like timeline stuff, like, right? What if John quits? What if you quit? What if you're 7 weeks into it and the next week was your close, but on week 7 you're like, you know what, bro, I've been in your office and I try to explain it to people and this is what I tell them. I walk in and Jake Ransom is running around yelling. There's rap music on, there's kids jumping off chairs with like joy and happiness, they're screaming. There's John and Jake and Mike in the back of the room. The pit bulls standing up in the front, giving away hundreds of dollars.
Sounds right.
There's guys running around with boom boxes. Everybody's like screaming and happy and like, and you know, and just then that was the one group. Was that Vista I was with, right? Yeah. There's probably 80, 90 people in that room that you have changed all of their lives. They're in that room doesn't exist without you. And that's how I look at my rooms too. I'm like, it's an honor, right? But that room, those people, those opportunities physically do not exist. Those human beings would not be in that room had you quit on week 7. Right. So like, I love the timeline aspect of this. So tell me about that Death Valley part. Like, what was it like going through that on week 5, 6, 7 with no sale? Like, how did you get through it? Because I think that's important for people out there to hear. Like, when the way to lose is to quit.
Right.
The way to win is the only way is through. So how did you get through? What was your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, I think one word defines that, and it's purpose. I'm very blessed that I had purpose early on. My faith is crucial to me. It's instrumental. right? Like, I believe in God. I believe that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior, and that without him, I literally don't know what I would, where I would be. It actually blows my mind that people that have success in solar or in sales that have no faith component. I'm like, how do you do it? You know, because what got me through that was my faith in God and knowing that he had more for me, knowing that on the other side of this pain, on the other side of this rejection is more for me. Because I know that when I gave up that Profidence Alliance business, right, I vividly heard from God. And I had like two confirmations that God's like, hey, I have more for you. Just trust me. Like, give this up first and just trust, right? Go into this unknown, go into the, and so those 4 months before solar, right, I was in this moment of like, okay, I'm going to be faithful and just wait. I'm going to wait on him. And so when solar came in my lap, from the get-go, I was like, this is what God's been preparing me for. And so if I know this is what he has for me, then there is no giving up, because I just have to see it all the way through. Now, mind you, back a week seven, right? Even then, even though I knew that this is where I needed to be, I had no idea that it would become what it is today. Like, no idea. Like, people ask me sometimes, they're like, so like, did you know? I'm like, no, I had no idea. I was like, my goal was just like, let me be faithful where I'm at, right? At that point in my life, it was like, let me be faithful on just learning the art of setting appointments and closing deals. Because the way I justified it, I'm like, hey, if one person can do this, why can't I? Right? Like, cool. If one person can figure out how to get sales and get paid and make 100 grand a year, why can't I? And so I'm like, if they can do it, I can do it. And so, you know, I just had that purpose of like, I know that this is what God has for me. And I just have to see it all the way through. And so, of course, I'm grateful I did. But that's what got me through it. Like, when I wanted to quit, it was a reminder of like, no, John, like, you waited 4 months for this. For 4 months, you gave up something that you loved, something that you worked a sacrifice for. You know, that Profidence Alliance business was like, I poured a lot of my blood, sweat, and tears into it to build that brand, and I gave it up, you know? And so, but I'm like, in exchange for what he had for me. And so, like, that's what got me through. It was my faith in God, my faith in knowing that the plans he has for me are better than anything I can dream or imagine. That's what got me through that Death Valley moment. And beyond, you know, my first actually sale canceled on me the next day. You know, I was excited that day. The next day they called me and it was like, oh yeah, we talked to our son and he said not to do it. And I didn't know how to overcome. And I was just like, are you sure? They're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, talk to you later. You know, I didn't know how to overcome it.
How many people have we seen? I have. How many people have you seen quit at that moment? And you can't talk them. You can't talk them out of it. I love what you're saying about purpose, man. I think that, you know, because we see, you know, listen, the Pareto principle is true throughout all aspects of life, the 20-80 rule. And it's true in time management. It's true in sales teams. Like, you know, in general, 20% of the salespeople are going to do 80% of the business and 80% are going to do 20%. And I think that a lot of it comes down to purpose. You know, I look back on, I'm just kind of reminiscing about how I came into this thing and it was full bore. There was just no, I was just eating material and videos and training and books in my car and one after another and content from day one. And I was so invested and my purpose was so big in what I was doing. I resonate deeply with what you're saying. And I see people that, and I don't want this to come off wrong, one of the things that makes me the most angry in our industry is when I see somebody that's capable and just won't commit to a deep enough level of time and personal investment to get what they need to do. And we see this in different aspects from, you know, big check syndrome, where you have a guy that's highly capable of earning hundreds, if not millions of dollars a year. And they just find some type of contentment at two or three deals a month or one deal a month where they can just get that one check and pay their bills and kind of float through. And, you know, and I've known people with kids and families and I'm like, man, you have what it takes to change your family's life, possibly for the rest of their lives and possibly their children's lives. And you don't have a big enough purpose, a big enough why, a big enough belief system in that. And I love what you said about, you know, it's that was just my takeaway from that. And it was, I'm not going to spread Doug's butter too much. He asked me not to speak about it, but one of the conversations I had with Doug, we were talking about a little bit of spiritual. And it was really impactful to me. And Doug said, when God speaks to me, I answer. And it doesn't matter if I want to do it or not. I trust and I have faith in God and I answer. And that's that purpose, man. And I think when you combine a lot of this like drive and purpose and will and faith, you start to see that some of the common denominators in highly successful people. So I love that, man. So you start as a setter-closer merge type thing. And then what does it look like? I mean, because now as senior director, you know, you're running what, two very large teams. You have a huge organization underneath you. You guys are, I know it's real, but I'm like, these guys did 100 deals last week. Like, you guys are monsters, dude. You guys are just chucking in huge numbers and you have a great rep count. You have a great PRA, which is all attestable to, you know, recruiting, training, and retaining, developing human beings. That's the only way to get to those numbers. And some of them are insane. I look on Grid and I'm just like, you know, I was talking to Cam the other week. You guys did like 108 or something in a week. And we're like, it's crazy. So, you know, that's where you're at now.
That was just Vista.
Just, yeah, one team, one week, team. There's a whole other, yeah. Another team, yeah. Right? And it's bananas. And so, you know, from a setter closer, starting as a setter and then learning how to close, what does the career path look like that? Because, you know, one of the things that I tell my people, and I'd love the audience to hear your career path from there, is we don't get hired to do this job. We've earned our way into this job. We knocked our way into this job. We sold our way into this job. We read our way into this job. We surrounded ourselves with the right people to be here. And you can be, I was a door knocker sitting in a chair one year in a rookie, you know, and then, you know, off we go into our careers. So what did that career path development look like for you? Go from the setter closer mix into like, what was your management progression from there? Path to progression.
Yeah. So like I said earlier, you know, I've always adopted this belief of like, hey, be where your feet are at. Right. I think too often we think too much about either the future or the past, right? The past, like, oh, well, you could have done different. The future, where you should be, right? A lot of people think they should be somewhere. And it's like, No. Be where your feet are at. Like be present, be planted, be faithful with what you have, right? There's this parable in the Bible that talks about how like, hey, there was this ruler that gave, you know, one guy five talents, right? Talent was a measurement of money back then, right? I think one talent was the equivalent of like one lifetime of wages essentially. And so one guy had five talents, another guy had three, another guy had one, right? Cool. The master goes away. He comes back. He's like, all right, let me give an account of what happened. The guy that had five multiplied it. The guy that had three multiplied. The guy that had one kept it the same, right? He didn't waste it though. He didn't waste it, but he didn't multiply it. And so I do think that you have to be faithful where you're at, right? Those guys showed like, hey, cool, I have five. They weren't thinking, well, why didn't I get 10? Or the guy that got three usually doesn't get a lot of credit, right? Because the guy that got three, he could have been like, well, how come he got five? Like, why am I getting three, right? But how often do we do that, right? People are like, oh, I should be a manager. It's like, no, be faithful where you're at. If right now you're a closer, become the best dang closer. And by just the natural order of this world, you're going to get promoted. You know what I mean? Because if you're the best closer and you can't be like, well, I already am. Like, no, just wait long enough. It's going to happen. Right. And so like my progression path, it wasn't like one day I was just like, one day I will be the, it didn't happen. It didn't happen like that. Power. Like I had no clue. Like right now we have about 450 reps across the division. I had no clue even 3 years ago that we would be at where we're at today. You know, I was, like you said, I was content when we had one office that was kicking ass, you know. Now we have like three mega offices and then like about five, six other like smaller ones. But I was so content when we just had one office. Like the first time we won the Masters, I was like so happy. But what happens when you are where your feet are at, right? Promotion happens as a byproduct of that. So I would just say like for anyone looking to get promoted, right? Just right now, figure out, okay, where am I? Right? Like we're like have an evaluation of like, where are you at? And then become the best where you're at. Stop thinking about the future. Stop thinking about like, well, I should be here. I should be like, that's entitlement, right? Or the past, like, oh, woe is me. I had this. Like, no, be where your feet are at. And by over time, opportunity will come, promotion will come. Because that's essentially how over the years I became where I'm at today, right? I was a great closer setter. Eventually, the opportunity to become an ADM came by. I remember when Legacy first launched I was actually Legacy's first ADM because back then we only had DMs. And when they first launched that, they set the requirements like, hey, to be an ADM, you have to at least do 15 SRAs in a quarter, and you have to be here for I forget how many long. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's me. Like I fit that criteria. So I reached out to my leadership and I was like, hey, I want to interview for this ADM position. Guess what? I got it. Cool. Then I was an ADM, and then I decided I'm going to be the best dang ADM. And I actually went through a season for a few months where I felt entitled, and I saw my DM at the time. I was making $15 a kilowatt as an ADM. Okay. Chump change. I was making about $45 to $60 an install. Okay, Lee, that's how much I was making as an override. My DM though was making about $80 a kilowatt, right? So he was like, I don't know, what is that? About 7X what I was making. And I remember I went through a season where I'm like, man, I'm recruiting more. I'm building more. I'm training more. I'm taking more guys out on the doors more than he is, yet he's bringing it in. And I brought it up to my mentor. My mentor is like, John, if you honor what's not yours, then one day other people will honor what is yours. So choose to honor him for where he's at. And I chose to operate in that abundance mindset that, you know what, even though I feel like I should get more, I'm going to continue to become the best ADM. I'm going to continue to provide the most value, even if I feel like I'm not being paid in relation to that, and just trust that one day, right? And that day came, then I became a DM. Oh, cool. I got my own thing, right? My own office, right? And then same thing with DM. Then I become some, one day I wake up and I guess I'm an RM, right? And then same thing, one day I wake up and I'm a senior director. And then right now, the next thing in me is like, cool, I'm going to be the best dang senior director possible and become a VP, right? And so it's just be where your feet are at, become the best at it, get rid of entitlement, get rid of like, I should be here. You don't get to decide that. Right? Just be the best at it. And in time, this world will reward you.
That's fire, man. So many nuggets in there. I can't wait to re-listen to that. You know, it's interesting because I'm just sitting here reflecting on, you know, different people and their actions. And we see a lot of this in the industry, exactly what you're talking about is people they're so not where their feet are, and they get this feeling, this lack of contentment and this unjustifiable ego with what they should be achieving or what so-and-so has. And you see them, their minds and their bodies, and they just split off in fracture, and they're always restarting, and they're always here, and they're always there, and they're always there. And it's really this like lack of just going through. Listen, the magic pill in this industry is hard work, dedication, perseverance, and commitment to whatever and wherever you're at, regardless of anything else going on. I love that, you know, the being where your feet are. And I look back at it, you know, my career, and that's exactly, you know, and I struggle with my mind. I have attention deficit. I just read a really good book. Anybody who thinks they have attention deficit, it's called How to Survive as a Farmer in, How to Survive as a Hunter in a Farmer's World. But my mind, I have a balancing act in my mind constantly that I'm trying to like, you know, find peace in. And it's away from the past and away from the future, and to keep my, like right now, you know, I've been going through a few things the last couple of days, and my mind starts to play chess. And it's like, well, this move and that move and what's in. And I've just been really focused in the last 6 months of really practicing exactly what you're talking about. So I love that you're speaking about it, where I just reel it back in. And I'm like, that hasn't even happened yet.
Right.
That's not a real thing. What's going on right now? Is everything okay right now? What actions can I do right now? Because I've been in situations in my life where I've had a fear. I always mispronounce it, but I think it's the Oedipus complex, where you create your own worst fears.
Yeah.
And I've had a fear and then acted on it and then found out it wasn't even that. And I actually caused it to come true because my mind was not where my feet were.
Exactly.
So that was
and fear, right? An acronym of fear is false evidence appearing real.
Yes.
And so, you know, I you know, one thing I believe is like, look, you can either choose to operate in faith or fear. Faith and fear, actually, they're not that different, right? Fear is believing in something that hasn't happened that is bad. Faith is believing in something that hasn't happened that is good. Right. So they both require a belief in that, in something that has not yet happened. Right. However, one is good and then one is negative. I remember
mic drop on that. It was great.
I remember, you know, going back to the whole Death Valley thing. I remember I went through this period where I kept thinking about like, man, how am I going to pay bills tomorrow? Rent's coming up. How am I going to pay rent? I got a quarter tank gas left and 10 bucks in my bank account. How am I going to afford that? And one day God spoke to me so clearly, and he's like, John, 6 months ago, you were stressing about the same thing. He's like, let me ask you a question. Do you still have a roof over your head? Do you still have a roof over your head? I'm like, yeah. Have you still figured out how to get around? Yeah. Have you gone hungry? Are you starving? No. Now, granted, I wasn't like living a lavish lifestyle, you know, but I'm still here, right? The things that I thought, like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get evicted next because I can't afford rent. I'm going to be on the streets. I'm not going to be able to eat anything. I'm gonna have to walk everywhere. It's like none of those things ever happened. But yet for a long time in my early career, I allowed it to consume my bandwidth, right? That fear, the false evidence appearing real, allowed it to consume my bandwidth.
And it changes your actions too, doesn't it?
It changes your actions. You're right. And so after 6 months, like God convicted me. And then after that, I was like, dude, the things I was worried about 6 months ago that I thought was going to happen right then and then never happened. So even if right now I'm thinking about next month, I'm like, if anything, the past shows me that I'm going to be okay. The past shows me that I'm always going to find a way. I'm always going to find a way to make rent on time. I'm always going to find a way to have food. And look, I went through a season where all I ate was ramen and noodles for like 2 months. You know, because that's all I could afford. But you know what? I wasn't starving. I wasn't like freaking with skeletons, you know? I found a way. And so that's, you know, another kind of way I got through that Death Valley. It's just like being where my feet are at and just waking up. And every day I woke up, I was like, okay, do I have a roof over my head today?
Now, right now.
I don't
know
about tomorrow.
But right now.
But today, I'm like, yep, cool, I do. Okay, do I have enough food to feed me for today? Not tomorrow. Yep, I do. Okay, do I have enough gas to get around? Maybe it's only a quarter tank. And maybe I only have $5 in a bank account. But do I have enough gas to get around today? Yeah. Or even like on the money thing, I remember there was this Wendy's. There was this Wendy's where I got the 4-for-1. And I went there almost every single day. Because for $4, Lee, I got like fries, like 2 chicken sandwiches, a drink. You can't beat that for $4 at Wendy's. But I was like, cool, I have enough. Like, I have at least $4 to feed me today.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's what I mean by being where your feet are at. It's like really looking at what you have around you and just being like, I have enough today to go make it happen. Stop thinking about tomorrow. Stop thinking about next month, right? Because that's when fear creeps in. They're like, oh, next month you won't have enough. Next month you won't get any money coming in. Next month, next week, tomorrow. No, forget all that. Be where you're at today. Ask yourself, what do I have around me and how can I make the best of what I have around me?
Yeah, I absolutely love this conversation, man, because, you know, just thinking through what you're saying, you know, and these are emotions that we all deal with. You know, this is the thing when you're in this industry early in your career, you go through all of these emotions. Later in your career, you go through all of them as well. You've just learned how to manage and deal with them better, right? We're capable of putting mental and spiritual sandbags out to stop the rush of emotions, reel it back in through a wealth of experience that we've, and what we've gone through, we can control that better. And I'm just sitting here thinking about what you're saying. Like, the actions of a person in fear are almost crippling as opposed to the actions of a person in faith. Because when you're in faith and you're like, yeah, it's tough, but I 100% believe that I'm capable of doing it. And, you know, one of the sayings that I've always been most fond of in my life is that you can put fear in front of you and it will hold you back, or you can put fear behind you and it will push you forward. And I've always been a big believer, like, there's been plenty of times when I've had financial insecurity. You know, listen, when I started this career, I had $2,000 in the bank. I had to get it. I had a company truck that I had to give back. I had full custody of my daughter. Misty had just moved in. I was leaving a job that was paying me $100,000, which I thought at the time was like, you know, amazing. And I'm going into door to door at 41 years old. And I was scared to death, man. And I remember I just knocked myself senseless for the first 2 years was just, but I was terrified to fail. And that fear was, and there was faith because it was, I just did this interview with John Taylor, my original regional and one of my mentors, lifelong mentors. And he said, Lee, the reason that you believed so much was because you had a high success rate. You had proof of other individuals that were working that hard in the office. Right. And that if you did what they were doing, you too could achieve that because you could see and believe it. And I remember just thinking about what you're saying is I did have faith and I did have fear, but I had put my fear behind me and right. My faith put me to work. And I remember, you know, I remember coming home at like 7 or 8, putting my keys down, bangling, and then going back out in my little Volkswagen. And, you know, I'm a big dude driving this little Volkswagen Passat, just going back out knocking because I'm like, and I probably have it, but it was like, you know, you look at people and they're like, oh, my bills, oh, my this, oh, my that. And they're working 3 or 4 hours a day. Mm-hmm. That's not faith, man. That's fear. Fear has you working 3 or 4 hours a day. Fear has you crippled with anxiety. Fear has you doubting yourself. Fear has you doubting your leadership. Fear has you doubting your choices. Faith is stronger than being tired. Faith is stronger than being worn out. Faith is stronger than anybody being able to stop you, because right. You just believe you can do it and you're going to go to work as hard. So tons of bombs in there, man. I usually love re-listening to these podcasts, but I'm super excited to re-listen. That was some amazing content. So what is life like now, man? Just bought a beautiful new house, San Diego. You have a bunch of, you know, amazing leaders surrounding you that you've surrounded yourself with. Jake, bunch of, you know, Mike's there. Malik, you got Stetson. You just have some great human beings that you've gathered around you. The Pitbull, just, you know, the teams. Like, what is it like now? Because now you have more of a satellite view, right? So you're leading leaders. What does that landscape look like?
Yeah. So I think to answer that, you know, going back to purpose, right? My purpose is to raise up 10,000 men and women of valor. Right. And I think to understand that, you got to know what the word, valor means. So, I remember 3 years ago when we got to name our division, it was actually rooted from, there's a story in the Bible from King David, or well, he wasn't king yet, but, essentially, long story short, after David defeated Goliath, he goes to hide in the cave of Adullam, and the Bible talks about how 400 men come to his aid. And the Bible describes these men as broken, discontent, and in debt, right? And it's interesting how, like, these were like essentially the rejects, the beta, the broken men of that society. And the Bible says David became captain over all 400. Well, a decade later, now he's the king of Israel, right? Kicking butt. And the Bible goes on to actually now list all the accolades these men did. And it ended with saying, and these were David's mighty men of valor. And look at the word valor, and valor means having courage in the face of adversity. And I got to thinking, I'm like, what happened? These men 10 years ago were being described as broken, in debt, and discontent. Now they're being described as essentially courageous men, men that went out there and did some like really awesome and epic things. And so, you know, God spoke to me clearly. He's like, hey, number one, ask, what kind of leader did David have to be to draw out the gold in them, something they didn't see in themselves? But more importantly, number two, what kind of culture had to transpire? Because one person can't mentor 400 people, right? There had to be a culture of men sharpening men. And so in that moment, I heard clearly from God that he's like, hey, I'm going to send you broken, discontent, and in debt men and women. And your job is to mold them into men and women of valor. And the reason I love the door-to-door space is because it's an opportunity to go against the version of you every single day. It's always you versus you. It's not you versus the door. It's not you versus the homeowner. It's always you versus you. And so it's an opportunity to mold that. So, you know, it's interesting. I tell people this, like on the outside, it looks like we sell solar. But if you spend enough time within organizations, selling solar is actually the second thing we do. The first thing we do is really work on ourselves. And we're huge on having people understand what it means to be a man, woman of valor. It's like, hey, getting that AQ up that we talk about, right? Having that courage in the face of adversity. And so kind of like what is it now, right? It's to fulfill that purpose, right? It's to, you know, from a more analytical or more analytical answer would be, how can we have better systems, processes, and how can I delegate better, right? SPD, I call it, or I say, hey, if you want to have speed, right? SPD, speed, you want to have systems, processes, and delegation. And so now it's more like, cool, how can we make the systems, processes, and delegation better to fulfill that vision of becoming a man or woman of valor? Because the doors allow you to do that. And a lot of our guys know that when they're going out there, it's not so much they're going out there to make 10 grand, 20 grand. It's more like, hey, I'm going to go become this man or woman of valor. I'm gonna go have a higher AQ. I'm gonna go conquer the version of me today. I'm gonna go conquer, you know, I'm gonna start saying this now, my inner Democrat, right? And, you know, become the better version of me. And so, you know, that's our purpose. And now for me, like you said, satellite view is like, okay, just looking at the whole thing and being like, what systems gotta be created? Because I think at some point, as a leader, you get to a point where you don't manage people as much anymore. You really do manage systems and processes, and you got to learn how to empower and delegate. I think that last one is the one leaders struggle with the most, is I think leaders, we kind of, most of us have this performance attitude where we think we can do it we're the only ones that can do it as well as we can. But you actually have to be willing to share the platform. You got to be willing to be like, hey, I'm going to share authority and power and responsibility with this person. And sometimes they let you down, right? But I would say that more times than not, they actually surprise you. There's been many people that I'm like, I don't know, but I trust them with it. And this sparks something new in them. And then now I'm able to delegate something off my plate, right? And I think a lot of leaders struggle with the art of delegation, right? And delegation isn't just like, hey, go do this, right? Like a simple kind of formula for delegation is, you watch, I do, okay? You watch, you help. I'm totally
you do, I watch.
You do, yeah. You watch, you help. You watch.
I do.
I do. You watch, you help. And then.
You do, I help.
You do, I help. Yeah. Anyways, I totally butchered. I'm about to follow up with you on that. Yeah. I'm totally butchering.
We're tracking. No, we're tracking.
But yeah, something like that, right? Where delegation is not just like, hey, go do this thing. No. It's first you say, hey, I'm going to share. Right. First come watch what I do.
Yep.
Right. See how I do it. Right. And then cool. Hey, now you do it. Now you're acting under my authority. Right. But I'm going to be here just going to catch you in case things fall. And then eventually it's like, now it's your authority.
Do it.
And that's really how to delegate. It's not just like, go do this thing. That's being a dictator. Right. And so I think as we continue to grow, like that's where I'm at. Like now I'm at a point where like, I don't have to think about correlations at all. Like they just happen automatically. You know what I mean? I don't have to think about a lot of things in an organization where I can focus on the large scale, big picture stuff, right? That systems, process, and delegation.
Man, we got to do part two, man. This was so good. Yeah. This was so good. There was so many nuggets in here, man. I flew out to San Diego today just to do this podcast with you. It's been hard to get you locked down to come into Vegas or catch you in Utah. So I'm super grateful that I did, man. You know, again, you're just somebody that I've admired. I love watching what you're doing. For me, it's people. And how they act with their people, it's very important to me because of how much I care about my people. You know, it's like a lot of what we see from, you know, Doug and Luke and some of the greats in the industry is they're people. They're servant leaders. And I love watching that with you, man, and like how you really lead your organization and watching what you've done. You know, I've only been here for a couple of years at Legacy with you watching you do it, but knowing what you've come from and what you've done is amazing. And it's just so much respect. So thank you for coming on, John. I appreciate it. I know everybody's going to get a ton of nuggets out of that one, man. There was just so many. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Lee. It's an honor to be here. Can't wait for part two.
Part two, man. Thanks, John.